Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Today, we're diving into something really fundamental and, well, often quite challenging. Male infertility. It affects millions globally, you know, and for so many, the underlying cause just remains unknown. Imagine that frustration.
It's a huge issue, and the lack of answers can be incredibly difficult.
Exactly. But what if part of the answer isn't some massive genetic fault, but something more specific, maybe hidden deep in the process that turns our genes into functional proteins, especially in a unique place like the human testes?
You mean the actual machinery of gene expression?
Right. Think of the cell like a factory. DNA is the blueprint in the main office, the nucleus. To make anything, those plans, the messenger RNAs or mRNAs, have to get out to the factory floor, the cytoplasm.
Crossing the nuclear envelope through those nuclear pore complexes.
Precisely. It's a critical transport step. So what if that system glitches, particularly during sperm production?
The consequences could be, well, profound for fertility.
And that's what we're getting into today. A fascinating new study looking at specific, uniquely human genes. Genes that seem to be an essential X factor for making sperm correctly. It's about evolution, human specifics, and maybe new hope.
And it's really important work. So before we jump in, we should definitely acknowledge the researchers. Today we celebrate the groundbreaking work of the research teams from the University of Munster, University of Turku, Radboud Mokadomic, Newcastle University, and the University of Edinburgh. They've really pushed forward our understanding of the genetics behind male infertility and these unique gene expression pathways in the testes.
Absolutely. A big collaborative effort.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's unpack this. You mentioned this transport system. In most of our cells, there's a standard way these mRNA messages get out, right? Using NXT1 and NXF1.
That's the standard pathway, yes. Okay. Almost universal in our bodies. NXT1 and NXF1, they pair up, form a heterodimer, and they're like the main couriers for mRNA.
Good couriers. And they have to get through that nuclear envelope barrier.
Exactly. The envelope has these gates, the nuclear pore complexes, or NPCs, very tightly regulated. The standard process involves getting the mRNA ready, kind of licensed for export with help from things like the TREX complex. Then NXT1, NXF1 takes over, grabs the mRNA, and guides it through the NPC into the cytoplasm for translation into protein.
A well-oiled machine, essential everywhere, but the human testis does things differently. This is where the human-specific part comes in.
This is where it gets really interesting. While that NXT1, NXF1 system is the workhorse generally, humans have evolved something extra. We have these unique X-chromosomal paralogs, gene cousins, essentially of those core parts.
Gene cousins, okay.
So for NXT1, we also have NXT2. And for NXF1, there's a whole family, NXF2, NXF3, NXF4, NXF5.
Wow, quite a few alternatives.
And here's the kicker. NXT2, NXF2, and NXF3 show really high expression levels, specifically in the testis.
Ah, so they're not just general backups. They're specialists for the testes.
Precisely. And this is a big clue because in mice, the equivalent gene, NXT2, it's expressed everywhere. And what's more, it's not even essential for fertility in mice.
That's a stark difference. Suggests a special job in humans.
It strongly hints at a unique human or primate-specific role that's evolved, likely tied to the complexities of our spermatogenesis.
Right. So if these specialized players are potentially vital, what happens if they malfunction? How did the researchers start digging into that?
Well, they used a multi-layered approach. It started right down at the protein level, inside actual human testicular tissue. They used something called antibody-mediated capture. Think of it like using a tiny, very specific magnet to pull out NXT2.
Okay, isolating NXT2 from everything else.
Exactly, but they wanted to see what else was stuck to it, its interaction partner.
Its molecular network.
Right, so they used mass spectrometry afterwards. It's a technique that can identify all the different proteins that came along for the ride with NXT2.
Building a map of its connections within the testes.
Yes, mapping its interactome, but just finding associations isn't enough. You know?
You need proof they actually bind directly.
Precisely, so they followed up with validation experiments.
Like what? How do you confirm that direct handshake?
They used a technique called co-immunoprecipitation, or co-IP, in lab-grown human cells, specifically HEK293T cells. This lets you test if two specific proteins, say NXT2 and NXF2, or NXT2 and NXF3, actually stick together directly.
Ah, okay. So they confirm the binding.
They did, and they even pinpointed the specific part of NXT2, the NTF2-like domain, that's crucial for grabbing onto NXF2 and MXF3.
That's really detailed work, getting down to this specific domains. But
yeah.
As you said, interactions in a dish are one thing. How did they link this back to actual human infertility cases?
That was the next major step. They screened large groups, large cohorts of infertile men, over 3,300 men, actually, from well-established cohorts like MERGE and the NIMH Newcastle groups.
3,300, that's a significant number. What were they looking for?
They were hunting for specific genetic changes, variations in the NXT2 and NXF3 genes. Things like loss of function variants, where the gene's basically broken, or mutations that drastically change the protein, even deletions or duplications of the gene.
Looking for the genetic typos that could explain infertility. And if they found a suspicious variant.
Then came the functional deep dive on that variant. They didn't just assume it caused the problem.
They tested it.
Oh, yes. They used minigene assays to see if the mutation messed up how the mRNA message itself was assembled, looking for splicing errors. They used Western blots to check if the protein was even being made correctly or if it was unstable.
Checking protein levels and stability.
And they went back to those co-IP experiments, but this time using the mutant versions of the proteins to see if the genetic change actually stopped NXT2 from binding to NXF3, for example.
So confirming the functional consequence of the mutation.
Right.
Wow.
And crucially, they tied all this molecular and genetic data back to the clinical picture. They examined testicular biopsies using special stains and markers like PAS staining, MAGE4, SOX9 to see the cell types and structure within the testes.
Looking directly at the tissue level.
And also checking for NXT2 and NXF3 protein expression right there in biopsies. For men who produced any sperm, they did detailed analysis of sperm shape, motility, using techniques like Papanicolaou staining and MitoTracker to visualize the mitochondria, the sperm's powerhouses.
It's incredibly thorough. Connecting the gene, the protein function, the tissue structure, the final sperm outcome.
So after all that meticulous investigation, what were the key findings? What did they learn about NXT2's role?
The results were really striking. First, they confirmed NXT2 is a major hub in the human testes pathway. It definitely interacts with the standard NXF1, but its strongest connections were with the testes-specific NXF2, a 56-fold enrichment there, and NXF3 with a 45-fold enrichment.
Huge enrichment. So it strongly prefers these testes-specific partners. Absolutely. And it also connected with key nuclear pore proteins, confirming its role in transport across that nuclear boundary.
Okay, central player confirmed. And you mentioned something earlier about it replacing NXT1.
Yes, this was a major revelation. In the human testes, NXT2 isn't just present, it's the predominant NXT protein. NXT1 levels are actually very low there, so NXT2 really steps up and takes over the main role in this tissue.
It's like the testes has swapped out the general manager for a specialist.
Exactly. It points to this highly adapted, specialized system just for human sperm production. It's quite distinct.
And they knew which part of NXT2 was key for connecting with NXF2 and NXF3.
Yes, that NTF2-like domain was confirmed as the critical binding site.
Okay, molecular picture is clear. Now, the link to infertility, what did they find in those patient cohorts?
This is where it gets really impactful. They identified two infertile men with definite loss of function variants in NXT2. One man, M3065, had a duplication causing a premature stop signal, meaning no functional NXT2 protein was made, just completely gone.
No protein at all.
And the other, RU00584, had a large deletion removing the entire NXT2 gene. And crucially, this deletion was de novo. It appeared new in him, not inherited, which makes the link to his infertility very strong.
A spontaneous mutation directly tied to his condition. So what was the clinical outcome for these men lacking NXT2?
Both had azoospermia, complete absence of sperm in their ejaculate.
Azoospermia.
And their testicular biopsies showed a condition called Sertoli cell only syndrome, or SCO. Basically, the germ cells, the cells that actually become sperm, were almost entirely missing. Only the supporting Sertoli cells remained.
Wow. So no precursor cells even being made properly.
And it seems that way. And since NXT2 is known to be expressed very early, even in fetal germ cells, it suggests NXT2 is critical right at the beginning of germ cell development or survival.
A very early fundamental block. Now, what about NXF3? You said that story was different.
Yes, quite different, which highlights their distinct roles. They found one infertile man, M2799, with a premature stop codon in NXF3. This resulted in a shortened, truncated NXF3 protein that couldn't bind to NXT2 anymore.
So the protein was there partly, but couldn't do its job with NXT2.
Right, and his clinical picture wasn't azoospermia, it was oligoazonautotota zoospermia.
Okay, that's a mouthful. Break it down.
Sure. Oligo, very few sperm. Espino, poor motility. They don't swim well. Torado, abnormal shape. Nearly 0% had normal morphology.
So he made sperm, but they were few, sluggish, and badly formed.
Exactly. Really severe defects. Lots of coiled tails, head problems, mid-piece issues. The mid-piece being the sperm's engine.
And does this fit with where and when NXF3 is normally active?
Perfectly. Unlike NXT2, NXF3 isn't really expressed in those early fetal germ cells. Its expression kicks in later during adult spermatogenesis, especially in the developing spermatids and also in the Sertoli cells.
So it acts later in the sperm production line.
Correct. And they found NXF3 protein normally localizes right to the sperm midpiece in healthy controls. But in this patient, M2799, NXF3 was absent from his sperm's midpiece.
Demonstrating its role in those final maturation and structural stages. It's so clear how they differ.
It really highlights these distinct stage-specific functions. NXT2 for the early foundation, NXF3 for the later construction and quality control.
Okay, so pulling back to the big picture, What are the major implications here? We've got these two related but distinct pathways.
Well, the first big implication is for diagnostics. The fact that loss of NXT2 leads to such a severe phenotype, that SCO and azoospermia makes it a really strong candidate gene for causing male infertility. It likely plays a vital role very early on, maybe in the Sertoli cells supporting the germ cells or in the germ stem cells themselves.
Providing a concrete genetic explanation for some previously unexplained cases.
Exactly. And then there's the evolutionary angle.
Right. Why do we have these specialized testes genes when mice manage differently?
The data really points towards adaptive selection in humans and primates. These genes, NXT2 and NXF3, seem to have evolved new, essential, tissue-specific jobs in us. It underscores that human reproduction has unique complexities. We can't just rely on rodent models for everything.
Our biology has its own specialized solutions, and the different phenotypes between NXT2 and NXF3 mutants really drive that home.
Absolutely. NXT2 loss hits early development, causing germ cell absence. NXF3 loss hits later, affecting sperm structure and function. It paints a picture of a multi-step process where different specialized components are critical at different times.
It's quite elegant in a biological sense.
Yeah.
Are there still unknowns, though? Things this research opens up for the future.
Oh, definitely. While the link to fertility is strong, we still don't know the exact cargo which specific mRNAs NXF3 is responsible for transporting in the testes.
Ah, so what messages is it actually carrying?
Precisely. And is its role only mRNA export? Yeah. Or could it have other functions? There are hints these NXF proteins might be involved in other things, maybe even silencing transposons, those jumping genes, which is critical for keeping the genome stable in germ cells.
That would be another layer of complexity.
Yeah.
Protecting the genetic information itself.
It's a key area for future work, understanding the full scope of what these unique human proteins do.
So let's try to crystallize the take-home message. What's the essence of this deep dive?
I'd say it shows the human testos uses a highly specialized, uniquely adapted RNA export system. NXT2 is a central, indispensable player in this system. Losing it causes devastating early problems, leading to azoospermia.
Okay, NXT2 is critical early on, and NXF3.
NXF3. Working with NXT2 is vital for the later stages for proper sperm maturation and structure. Problems with NXF3 lead to severely defective, non-functional sperm. Together, they reveal this complex, X-linked genetic control over human male fertility acting at different key stages.
It really highlights a previously hidden layer of regulation. So the final thought then is, what does this mean for personalized medicine in male infertility? How might cracking the code of these unique human adaptations help us develop better diagnostics or maybe even future therapies for people facing these challenges? It feels like we're getting closer to understanding that X factor. This episode was based on an open access article under the CCB Y4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.